Hello.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm fine. It's
Fine? Just
whatever
fine?
day, whatever day it is. What day is it?
A Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Not to date this podcast and make it anything but an evergreen podcast, but yes, it is a Wednesday.
It could be any Wednesday. They don't know.
I specifically withheld the date of October 10th.
Yep, see, you let it slip now.
Yeah, shucks. Yeah,
What's going on
but
with you?
I'm fine. I'm just chilling like a comic villain, as they say, which means probably frozen and wrapped in grass.
We'll get to that. That was a peculiar
So,
ending.
anyone who's listening to this, we are talking about the movie Logan for Clonetober. I mean, Foxtober, because
Oh yeah, I guess it is Clonetober.
by accident so far. Yeah, we for the flimsy excuse of a month of discussing the franchises being consumed by Disney. We've already discussed Alien, and another notable Fox franchise is, of course, the X-Men mutant movies. I don't really have any interest in revisiting the first X-Men movie. I don't really think it's good. And the second movie has some problems. And then the third movie is real bad. And then there's the spin-off movies that. Anyway, this is a spin-off movie of all of that was critically acclaimed. So let's talk about this one, shall we?
Yeah,
Yeah,
I could,
you
mostly
said it
because
was
I don't even
good.
remember the other ones, and I couldn't tell you which one was which. I know there were like four Wolverine origin movies, and they were all bad, and this one was good.
There was a Wolverine Origins movie, and then there was The Wolverine, and The Wolverine was directed by James Mangold, who went on to do this one. So if you're wondering why we see a samurai sword hanging on the wall in his place in Juarez, it's because he
Yeah.
did the other movie.
I knew it was a reference to the Wolverine. I guess I forgot that James Mangold directed. James Mangold does not look like the person I thought he was.
Was that supposed to mean? Are we suddenly judging books by their cover now?
No, well, I just clicked on his thing, and I'm not sure what image I had in my head of James Mangold previously, but it was not this person. Anyway,
Was it
yeah,
Wes Mantooth by any chance?
who's Wes Mantooth?
Oh, from Anchorman.
Who plays that?
Don't. It's fine. We'll move on. It
Anyway,
was
the
bad.
Wolverine is stupid and bad.
I never bothered to watch it. I heard mixed things being the highest praise being it's better than the Origins movie. But
Well, the
that's
Origins movie is the one with Ryan Reynolds in it, right? With the mouthless thing, and he turns into Baraka from
And then
Street
he
Fighter,
somehow
Mortal Kombat, whatever.
turned that into his Deadpool career.
He made a couple of jokes about that in Deadpool.
Oh, good. I haven't seen those yet.
Yeah.
I've been steering clear because I heard that they are full of some rather immature comedy, and I only, accept the finest
The highest of
comedy.
brows. Yeah, but Logan's a serious movie. It's a real movie. It attempts to take place in a realistic world, and in addition to doing all of the wonderful things that it does, it kind of tries to wrap up a little bit of all of the nonsense that has come before it, perhaps attempting to pave way for some newer X-Men's that aren't bad, but who knows? This is the most recent one, right?
I can't
Was
remember.
that ridiculous apocalypse one after this or before?
I don't know. I think it was before.
It was before. It's 2016. Yeah, that
Okay.
movie was real bad. Real bad.
I heard that as well. Also directed by Bryan Singer, who apparently just vacated the premises during part of the filming, because he just does that now. And it was part of the reason why he got fired off of the Bohemian Rhapsody movie.
He just wanders in and out of the set when he feels like it.
Apparently he just like disappears. He like stresses out and then just disappears. And that doesn't help anybody who's trying to like make a film.
Well, you know, self-care is very important.
Also, you know, Bryan Singer is not really like a fine, upstanding individual if you like do a Google search on him. So that's another reason why I wanted to avoid a Bryan Singer movie. But it is interesting to see this one, though, because there are a lot of things where I'm just like, do I care that I missed this thing maybe happening kind of in a movie that I haven't seen? And it's like, no, I find this completely satisfying by itself.
Oh, yeah. Is there something in this movie that warrants prior knowledge?
Well, I feel like most people get the general gist of like Wolverine as a character and Charles Xavier and the school and mutants. If you don't get that general gist, it might not be as interesting, but I can't say because I have grown up with that knowledge. So it is something that I have in my being. But there are some questions about the specific movie chronology because they're using actors and talking about things that have happened in other X-Men movies. How should I say this? This is not the first time Patrick Stewart has died as Charles Xavier. And I have absolutely no idea if there is an on-screen explanation for that. I know that in X3, The Last Stand, the one directed by Brett Ratner, because Bryan Singer was too busy making Superman Returns.
Right.
Yeah.
That was a Brett Ratner movie. Yeah, that's the one where Phoenix Lady vaporizes him, right?
Yeah, yeah, Dark Phoenix is... it's not... There's going to be a new Dark Phoenix movie coming out now.
Yeah, I watched the trailer for that. It seems peculiar.
Seems bad.
It doesn't seem on the level of Logan.
No, I think the production forces at Fox are much more comfortable making the stuff that is in the vein of the first X-Men movie. Things that have a team and people have powers and there's a lot of melodrama.
Dorky nonsense.
Yeah, dorky nonsense. Whereas I feel like Logan is playing in a more adult space than that in terms of its themes and its focus on mortality and family and it doesn't get down to like, there's no romance in here. There's no like love triangle between Scott Summers and Wolverine and Phoenix Lady. Like none of that BS is present. So he
doesn't even sadly, longingly look at a photo of any of them in this movie. He's just going about his daily trying to survive.
Yeah. Well, that's probably one of the things that's haunting him and poisoning him from the inside.
Yeah. But not only is this movie kind of like post X-Men movies, it's kind of like post comic books. Like it's in a world where literally in the movie all of the mutants have gone extinct, and sort of metaphorically all of those movies have been treated as extinct, and now you're just sort of like in this wasteland where a couple of characters have survived, and how are they surviving? And not particularly well in anyone's case, whether mm-hmm. it be Logan, Charles, or Caliban there. They're all just sort of like, I don't know, they're living in a junkyard basically, trying to save up enough money, driving drunk kids to prom or whatever, so they can go buy a boat and sail away to somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Come sail away. Come sail mm-hmm. away. Come sail
away. What a dire existence. Yeah, well, all of them.
As the song goes.
Yeah. You can put that song in the opening of this episode.
You put that on the Sunseeker.
Speaking of music, I really liked the score on this movie.
I was going to mention that it was atmospheric, but...
It's soft and sad and slow piano, and I think it works.
Yeah, but it doesn't linger on the palate, so to speak. Mm.
Got the main theme that's in the beginning there that comes back two or three times. I think that's the one that I like.
Yeah, I mean, I don't find this offensive, and I don't think that it is sticking out from the movie that it's in. I think this
is very minimalistic.
Yeah. Like a gripe that I have had about the X-Men movies, the first X-Men movie was scored by Michael Kamen, who did the opening title music for the cartoon show, apparently. And he apparently wasn't able to capture the energy that Singer was looking for, so he got his friend John Ottman to do the second one. The second one is a yawn fest. And then the third one has a big operatic, energetic score by the composer is on the tip of my tongue, but it's escaping me. But it is so far above and beyond the level of drama that is occurring on the screen that it sort of goes into its own space of opera that is completely separate from the film. So it can make it makes it an interesting score, but like has nothing to do with what you're seeing really. And this one, you know, definitely is linked to the film, and you're seeing something that's comprehensively done. It doesn't linger. It doesn't stick around, you know?
Sure.
It's not repeating on me, but, I also like the sound design in this. There's a lot of grunting and smashing and cutting and shooting. It's hard to do that much stuff, especially like all at once in those action scenes and have it balanced. A lot of times I listen to these things that have those features, and you'll get one of those features very sharply occasionally, and then other things very muted, like dialogue. And then they'll be like, what is going on? I got to turn it up so that I can hear the dialogue, and then I got to turn it way down so that I don't have, you know, the police called to my house because the gunshots are so vibrant.
I think it's all pretty well done.
It's not a Christopher Nolan movie in that regard, which is a good thing. His sound design sucks.
And his scores usually use two notes.
Well, that's because it's Hans Zimmer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is another example of one of the great kind of movies that I enjoy. It's a very simple storyline. They're not trying to save the world, not even trying to save New York or the Statue of Liberty or whatever. They're just trying to scrap and survive. And then, you know, they've been in hiding. And one little person breaks through and figures out where they are. And that suddenly spirals into them running for their lives and trying to get away. And all sorts of bad things ensue.
Yeah. I mean, there are, like, logistics questions that come up when you start, like, picking apart like how these people have intersected in their lives and stuff. But it is a simple story in that Logan, we start the movie with Logan defending his leased limo that he uses to chauffeur people around so that he can collect money to go to his abandoned processing warehouse thing with the tipped over water tank where another mutant, Caliban, is taking care of Xavier inside of a water tank because Xavier is old and unstable. And you figure out that that is his primary motivation, is just taking care of Charles, and that Charles can't really be put in the care of anyone else, that he has to do this. And Caliban points out all of the flaws that are going on right now. Logan's not really healing very well. He's drinking a lot. He's can't even read like the prescription label. He's so out of it and seemingly in constant pain. You know, Logan just wants Caliban to do his thing, and he just wants to go on his Sunseeker, and he wants to look at his adamantium bullet thing for shooting himself in the head at some point on the Sunseeker, I guess. I don't know how that all pans out. It doesn't seem like the Sunseeker was a good plan, but anyway.
It was a little bit of hope to keep him going. It probably was never going to happen.
No. But he was making a call, trying to make it happen. So it was close enough. It wasn't just on his vision board. We established a lot of stuff in a nice way there at the beginning. And then we get the scene of the cemetery with the introduction of the nurse and Laura. And of course they're using fake names, and there's the Fiat that drives past. At first I thought the nurse lady was gonna like ram the Fiat into the limo. Just be like, now you gotta deal with me. But she didn't. She just drove by in a huff. Then she has this hotel that seems to be run by an American manager, but I couldn't tell if they were supposed to be in El Paso or Juarez for the hotel.
I think everything is in El Paso except for where they live. It looks like he sort of crosses the border and goes and works in the United States and then sort of heads back home to hide in Mexico.
Okay. So he crossed the border to go to their hotel and meet them, and then cross the border back to go to Juarez and set up stuff for his long journey, then goes back to the hotel across the border again, and then crosses back from the hotel when he finds the dead nurse to his place in Juarez, and then they all meet up there and then go back up north to America. But not
something
through the
border. Like that. Yeah, maybe they're not literally in El Paso, but yeah, that's basically the gist of it.
I don't know. It felt like they were on the border, but they just kept playing kind of like loose with which side was which, because it seemed like if the nurse lady was on the run with the kid, how did she get across the border? It's not exactly like the kid has any form of documentation or anything.
I'm not sure they're actually going to be flagged at the border on the run. I think they're just trying to not run any credit cards that will throw up flags for the bad guys for the company that I've forgotten the name of.
Transigent. Yeah.
So that's one that I have no idea if there's references to that in the earlier movies, because I don't know.
No, but I think they talk about Alkali. What's weird is the Weapon X program was in Canada, but they're fleeing to Canada.
The Weapon X program was in Canada?
I thought so.
It's something by the big lake or whatever.
Yeah, but I thought it was Canada. But anyway, it doesn't really matter. They got across from one to the other, and they make a big deal about like borders and stuff. But the borders don't seem to impede them when they're going back and forth between El Paso and Juarez, because they have mercenary force with lots of weapons and guns that can maneuver on either side of the border, no problem. They seem to have federal support when they're in Mexico, because there were some people who seemed to have like arm badge things that indicated that they were somehow affiliated with some sort of presumably corrupt Mexican authority.
When he first rolls up and Laura's there, he's trying to communicate / warn the fellows that are standing behind him not to point the guns at her and make her mad, because that's going to be bad for everybody.
Yeah. And then later on, we have that weird scene with Xander Rice, where he's talking to some U.S. person who seems to be involved with the military there. And the nurse in her documentary video that she made on her Sony camera phone seemed to imply that the experiments that they were conducting were illegal in the U.S. and Canada, but somehow
it was very specific and kind of odd that she said what I'm going to show you is illegal in Canada and the U.S. and I think she said Mexico, maybe.
Yeah, but it just sort of raised questions about like why are any of these people cooperating with these? I wanted to see like the link of like the government explicitly wants weapons development. And they are paying for that, and so that's why they go along with that. But there was never an explicit link. They just show up places and can shoot or maim or kill anyone or anything that they want to with no impunity. And so it's just kind of like shrug, I guess. Like that part of it, I don't quite follow.
I thought it was just private organization, but it would make sense that there was some sort of government backing behind all of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, ideally, their end goal is to create a soldier. You got to sell the soldier to somebody. You know, you mean just like a soldier sitting on a shelf or something.
I mean, if you had enough of them, you could just take over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you had enough X-24s, you could just, you know, walk into the Capitol and say, it's ours now. And if not, Wolverine's going to cut your head off.
Sure.
What do you think of the violence and the gore?
It was a little too much for me.
I think this is the first R-rated one of these movies.
Mm-hmm.
They really went for that hard R.
Yeah. They got it in spades. Mm.
I mean, in the sense of making a movie about Wolverine, a very large man with big metal claws who stabs and cuts people, this is probably the most realistic portrayal of what that would look like. And I thought they did a good job of not pulling their punches with a lot of the, you know, like the claws through the face kind of stuff was all quite horrifying.
Well, I believe that there has been previous criticism from Uber nerds that the violence had been too tame, that there's this guy running around with like knives for hands and like he basically like bumps into people and they fall over in kind of the previous films. They wanted to see like the actual, like if you actually had knives on someone's hand, like what would happen?
Severed limbs,
yeah.
Heads cut off, that sort of stuff.
There's how many heads, how many decapitations are in this film? Three?
Laura cuts the head off that one dude. X-24, the redneck boss leader guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if there are any other decapitation. Logan puts his claws through a lot of heads, but
yeah.
I don't know that he takes heads clean off.
No. So there's two decapitations. There's a lot of stuff. And like you said, the claws through the faces and stuff. I don't know if we necessarily, while I understand the criticism that it didn't seem like you were seeing the violence that knives would cause on screen before, I don't really want to see it. is what it turns out to be. It's done well. Like, there isn't any of this that really like felt like cartoonish or like weird in that sense, but it's like, I don't know. It's just so graphic that it's just like,
yeah.
Who wants to look at this all the time? Like,
I mean, it adds to the little bit of a theme when he's attempting to pass down a little bit of knowledge to Laura towards the end when he says, you know, you're going to have to learn to live with the people you've killed. And she said they're bad people. He said, it's all the same. It doesn't really matter. You know, you did that. And from his perspective, like, they're not exactly like, oops, I killed somebody. It's like, no, I literally put knives through somebody's face. And like, that's what I had to do to survive, and I have to, you know, live with that feeling and that memory or whatever. They don't really play on that theme too much because it's kind of a little bit of a postscript as they're on their way over the border. But, you know, this movie attempts to give you a more, I don't know, personal view of Logan, just to sort of see what he's gone through. You know, the idea that this adamantium is literally poisoning him to death and there's nothing he can do about it except just keep going until he falls down and just live a miserable existence. And it tries to, you know, illustrate the consequences of who he is and the world that surrounds him and just sort of the stigma of what he is along with all of this stuff. And I think it does it in a pretty good way. But like, yeah, the violence stuff is just like, well, I mean, he's which movie was it where they tried to like really dig into like his feral animal roots or whatever, where he's like a wolf sniffing people in the forest and like tracking them down. Like, I guess that's just sort of his attack mode and his defense mechanism is just to swing wildly with these knives at people and just go straight at him and shut him down as quickly as possible because they got guns and he's got knife hands. But it's something else. You got arms and legs and stuff flying everywhere.
Yeah. Now, another thing I had not expected was the reveal of the daughter, Laura. Not only that it was his daughter, but that it was, you know, via this genetic cloning process-ish, sort of, although she's not a pure clone of him. And they outfitted her with an adamantium skeleton, which seems ill-advised to do in a child, because it's not like that
she's
grows
gonna grow
with you.
Well, maybe they put growing adamantium in her.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Maybe they intentionally stunted her growth so her her bones stay the same length.
Man, it would really suck though if she continues to grow up and her skeleton can't. Ouch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess that's an interesting part of the whole thing, right? Because she's like Logan, she has the healing thing, so whatever her body is doing to fight against the adamantium is kind of like just keeping her alive / working full time in yeah. addition to her being able to bust out the claws.
And then she'll eventually die a horrible, miserable death like her father, I guess.
Yeah. He should have at some point gone like, hey, in I don't know, however old Wolverine supposedly is or how long it's been since he had the metal in him, he's like, you know, in 40 years you're probably going to have this thing go down too, and you're going to feel real bad, and sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, can you have the adamantium removed from your skeleton?
There have been several storylines, I want to say, in the comics about that. Like in the mid-90s, they're all like, oh, look, bone claws, and it's like, this just looks stupid, you guys.
Oh, there's bone claws in Days of Future Past, briefly.
That's dumb. Because
he travels back in time. And then he's like, busts out his claws and their bone. And he's like, oh, yeah, because it's the 70s and I don't have metal in me yet.
But that doesn't make any sense.
Well, he's not literally traveling back in time. He's embodying his...
No. That's not the part that doesn't make any sense. The part where he has claws, because the claws...
Oh, he's a Wolverine, though. He's an animal.
But he's okay, anyway.
Well, I mean, the metal has to be grafted to something.
I thought originally they were just claws that were metal that were there.
Yeah, but like there has to be some sort of mechanism for moving them in and out of his hand. If he didn't have claws in the first place, what would be doing that?
Just like I thought it was like flexing his muscles or whatever in a certain way.
Mm.
But
a little hydraulics in there or something, some spring-loaded claws.
Yeah. No. Air suspension. No, I have no idea. But this just highlights how little we both know about the movies and the comics, but I like the part though where he can't he's got some claw dysfunction that he's dealing with.
Yeah, it's kind of amusing too, because when we see him in the beginning of the movie, not only is he defending his limo, he's drunk, passed out in the back.
Yeah, and he can barely fight these guys, although he can still fight them. He's just like,
he's got a whiskey
sloppy
claw.
Yeah, he's sloppy. He like tries to shield the car with his own body because he doesn't want the least car to be damaged.
Mm-hmm. And he heals faster than a car, which yeah. is kind of hilarious. And again, that's a bit of exposition in a cool action scene where you just see this like depressed, desperate state he's in to like protect his one little means of making any money by allowing himself to be shot in the shoulder.
Yeah. Now, what did you think of when he rendezvous with the villain? Our first of a couple villains.
Mm.
Yeah. Val Kilmer Doc Holliday.
As you referred to him, Doc Holliday. I never really considered him that, but yeah, he's definitely doing an affectation.
He's
very
doing a thing.
Doc
he's doing
Holliday.
A bit.
I enjoy the bad guy. Mr. Boyd Holbrook, apparently, is his name.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy him in this movie with his gold teeth and his red sunglasses.
Gold
and
tooth.
His...
He just has one gold tooth.
Yes, right, of course.
Yeah.
And his glasses, and he's got his weird tattoos and his robot hand.
Mm-hmm. I like the hand. I think they did a good job with the hand.
Yeah, like there's a whole crew of guys who are just like, yeah, it'll give us this leg up on being badass mercenary guys if we all have metal hands and stuff and we can punch extra hard and do things and what have you.
I took it to be because they had lost their limb previously.
Oh, I don't know. I thought they were all just like nutso, and they're like, I want a metal hand. How cool would that be?
Well, maybe. They don't exactly like spell it out, but they all seem to have like different augmentations. So I figured that it was replacing a lost limb. But we don't dwell on why he lost it. At first, when he's there and he's got his hand and he's like, oh, you don't know who I am. And I was like expecting him to go like, oh, you cut off my arm this one time, but he didn't. And so I was just like, this is kind of a letdown. Like, here's a guy who's missing an arm and here's a guy who removes arms. So like, connect the dots. That's what's what
match
I want.
Made in heaven.
Yeah.
And even more so at the end of the movie, he shoots him in his metal hand and messes it up rather than using his claws.
Yeah, yeah, because he has there's even a line at the beginning of the film about how the nurse was killed by a gun. And he's like, oh, did you do that? And he said, oh, I don't like guns. And he said, oh, you know, just asking or whatever, you know. And so here it is, the end. He uses the gun to get the guy who shot the nurse. So there you go.
I didn't put that together as a callback, but that's good.
Yeah, well, I think they did a pretty good job tying things together in here. I can poke fun at like certain things that seem strangely coincidental, etc. But there's a lot of stuff where things link up in a nice, satisfying way in terms of like a literary satisfaction of themes and plot elements interfacing. Mm.
Yeah, usually when a character in a movie says, like, I don't like guns, it's because they're a super awesome gunfighter and they've killed too many people with guns. They vowed never to touch guns again, but in the third act of the movie, they have to pick up a gun again and they mow everybody down with their awesome gun skills. But in this movie, it's like, I'm not a fan of guns because when you shoot me, nothing happens and I have giant knives in my hand, so what do I care?
I thought it was a weird line, too, because he's like, not a fan of guns. It's like, because why?
Because people shoot him with them.
No, but he maims everyone. You know, it's just like, okay, so it's not like you really like have a you don't really have like a high horse to be on here for this scene.
He prefers a gentleman's duel of swords.
That's not exactly what I would call it. But yeah, so he has his weird principles. When the nurse is dead and he goes back to his place in Juarez and is talking to Stephen Merchant, and he's like, wait, why are you back? Because obviously Stephen Merchant was like, you know, planning a very romantic evening, and he like met somebody on farmersonly.com and they were going to be swinging by. But, you know, he
night farmers only, because he can't go out in the sun. Hang on, I'm going to type that down.
Yeah, but so Stephen Burchett, poor guy, he's there when Boyd, as our lovely and wonderful Donald Pierce wanders over. There's a lot of Pierces and Rices and Xaviers and Xanders, and it's like, can you like use other things that don't quite sound the same? That'd be great.
I mean, names ebb and flow, so like it's trendy in 2029 to have a name like Pierce.
Yes, but that's the last name. That's not a trend.
Did somebody call him Donald? I didn't hear that anywhere. And IMDb just calls him Pierce.
He's listed on the Wikipedia page as Donald Pierce.
Oh, yeah. Well,
only the best people are named Donald. But so he's gold. What an interesting connection. But anyway, Donald Pierce is all like, oh, you know, where's the girl? You got a girl's backpack and a ball and stuff in your hands. So what's the deal? And
he's delightfully charismatic too in the earlier scene when he first just like hops in the back of the limo and he's like, well, look at you, I'm a fan. Like, and I love that they live in this world where X-Men comics and presumably X-Men movies are like a thing, and all Logan can do is like roll his eyes and go like, that's not how that happened, running around in the yellow spandex, and this is all very stupid. We had very serious things, as noted by the fact that I'm sticking knives through people's faces, and you're reading these silly comic books about, like, oh, look at us, saving the world and stuff. But yeah, Boyd Holbrook, he's like, wow, I'm a fan too. Like, I grew up knowing about you and stuff, and I'm a mercenary, and you're a famous person who kills people. And, you know, I like the kid at the end too, who has the little Wolverine doll that he's hanging on to when they're all sad. And it's just like, how crazy would that be to be? Not only is it like in a world where they're like, idolizing these particular like hero characters, but like they're superheroes. They're like literal superheroes with like mutant powers and stuff. And he's just like, can you leave me alone and not try to ask questions about things that didn't happen or pretend that I'm this guy?
Yeah, I like how they did it in this movie. It was the right amount of meta, because sometimes you get, especially with like time travel or something, you get like people in a series rendezvousing with people who should have this as part of their pop culture, but don't. So it's like, how does this world work? And in something like Watchmen, the graphic novel, and subsequently one of the iterations of the movie, the people have superheroes in their lives. So instead of reading superhero comics, they're like, that's passé. We're going to read comics about pirates and swashbuckling pirates. That's really...
That's in Watchmen?
Yeah, that's in Watchmen. So I find this compelling, the way they handle this, especially with that stuff that you're reading being baloney. Like, that's not what happened. And he chastises Xavier for basically like allowing this sort of campaign to go on where stories could be spun out about them, so that it would be good PR for mutants. But it makes a lot more sense than, you know, a world where you don't have comic books, but it's exactly like ours in all their ways. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, Chrysler's still around making funny looking cars.
Yeah. It was very funny looking limo, but they have, this is of course where we meet the girl, and she's eating cereal because she's a cereal killer. And it's not revealed what she is or what her powers are, whatever. Xavier's all happy about everything. And the outside with the bozo, he's like, oh, you know, I know you got, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to get her. And Logan tries to, you know, fend them off and stuff. And Caliban is claimed to be dead in a ditch. And then Laura is in the place all by herself. And there are people coming in, and she sees them on the monitor, and she's still chewing on her cereal. And she sees them approaching. She's still chewing her cereal. And they're right there next to her. And then you just hear a bunch of screaming from outside. It's like, well, now I get to find out what her power is. And this is where we find out how literal Charles was being when he said that she was like you. Because she comes wheeling out of there with claws, two little foot claws, and beats the crap out of everyone and dismembers and slays
just
them.
Flips and somersaults and kicking people in the neck with her knife toe.
Mm-hmm. And she gets shot in the chest with a harpoon, which is very graphic. and just, it's very weird to see something that graphic being done to a child in a film. It did not sit well with me. Even though she heals and stuff, it's still like, did we need to see that, I guess? Like, question mark? I don't know. Yeah, they deal with that situation. They get into the limo, and they try to get out of there, and they can't break the fence, which is actually kind of funny. And then they use the fence as a weird kind of weapon to kill and slam people around, which is a nice set piece. It's interesting, surely. They make their narrow escape, and they do the traditional, like, I'm on the other side of the train now.
Yeah, of course.
Thing. Which is, you know, just how the cookie crumbles. They skedaddle to Oklahoma City. And this is where we get the other stuff where we can settle down for a minute. On the way to Oklahoma City, we see some of the video that the nurse had shot on her camera phone, apparently, which...
She's holding it very close to the window in a couple of those instances when she's recording a scientist rice guy, and he's like, not... He can't see out of the corner of his eye that somebody's holding a cell phone up to the window 2 feet from his face. No.
There are so many of these where it's like, there is no stealthy way she could have held this at all, period. Like, it is a camera phone. Like, she has a camera on it, and the other side is a screen that displays what is happening. And she's in these places where there are guards everywhere and other nurses and everything, and she's surrounded on all sides in some of these shots where she's like panning around and looking at stuff. And it's like, that's not, there's no way, like there's no stealthy way that that could be done. And she has it edited with voiceover of her describing exactly what has occurred. And she cuts back to herself putting all this information in the hotel room where she had filmed herself with the selfie side of the camera. And it's just like, so she really is very sophisticated, and she would have had a career on YouTube had she not met an untimely end, because I don't know how else you put together this sort of thing. And then when the battery dies, I'm like, oh, that's nice. That's a good way to end it, so we don't have to deal with the rest of this exposition. But then he charges the stupid thing again, and then we get the rest of the documentary, and I was like,
Well, what I took away from it is that in the year 2029, Apple's Clips app has really come a long way,
but it's
and
a
made
Sony.
This sort of stuff easy. Well, you know, maybe.
Like, Sony's still going to be making phones in 2029. But they do the stuff and whatever. They get to Oklahoma City, and there is a brief flirtation with a gas station. Caliban is revealed to still be alive, and he's tortured with some sunlight. And they basically are keeping him alive to track track Laura, but he's giving them information at a delayed rate, Pierce feels like. But in Oklahoma City, meanwhile, Charles is not taking his meds, because Charles doesn't always remember things clearly and doesn't understand why he should be taking these meds, and he has several arguments about them. And if you've ever unfortunately been around somebody who doesn't remember why they're taking medication, it is believable. Patrick Stewart delivers a very good performance here as somebody who is losing his grip on sanity, but still feels like he is sane, and is very frustrated by that. And is frustrated.
And also frustrated by the fact that his caretaker is Logan.
Yes. They have a good rapport. So he doesn't take his pills. And Logan finds pills inside of the car when he goes to drop it off with I don't know, Under the Bridge gang, he's like, uh-oh, and then he gets his new wheels from vaping car salesman lady, which was such a funny touch when she takes that big long drag off of her little vape box thing, and it's just like, oh, how hilarious.
What's the future, man?
Yes, nothing says the future like vaping car sales lady, but they got to put new tires on it because the tires are bald, so it's going to take an hour. And so he's like, uh-oh, better go to that bar, and nothing's going to happen in the meantime, unfortunately.
This is where we get the delightful reveal that this peculiar mission that he had set forth on to take Laura and her... nurse mom before she was killed to North Dakota for some reason. He had a pack of money with some latitude and longitude coordinates on it, is in a comic book that was in Laura's bag, an X-Men comic where it shows Charles and the X-Men going to some place called Eden and pointing at a map and going, there's the coordinates. And he realizes that she pulled this out of nowhere, and he thinks she's lost her mind and that they're going to the middle of nowhere for no particular reason, and this is very stupid and it's going to end badly. Lucky for her, we learn later that all of the kids had the same stupid idea. So whether or not they're going to end up in the middle of nowhere is irrelevant. They're all going to end up in the middle of nowhere together. So that's okay. That's good.
Yeah. Home is where the nowhere is. But it's a good way to put it's a good way to add some tension here because it doesn't seem like it's a sure, safe thing. But at the same time, it is something that this kid believes in a lot. And he feels obligated to work on that. But not in this scene, because in this scene, he's just mostly angry. Charles is having a seizure. And it is causing a big problem for everybody.
So, are they in Las Vegas or just...
Oklahoma City.
Oklahoma City has a casino?
Apparently. They have the Harrah's there, but... I don't know what the rules are, but apparently there's a casino in Oklahoma City. Mm. And Charles is having his seizure episode, and when he has these, they affect everyone that's around. And basically
we get some radio announcer exposition that something like this happened in Westchester. We don't know which Westchester. A year ago,
Westchester, New York.
600 people were injured. I don't know if it said any of them were killed. But
some of the X-Men were killed, apparently. They don't describe which ones or say any of that, but it is a situation where basically, like, Charles had a seizure. A lot of people were affected by that before they could take care of the seizure, and that because of his powerful telepathy, his seizure basically affects everyone around him. That includes everybody in this casino. They basically all freeze in their tracks where they are, unable to breathe or blink or do anything. All just
And if it was the
stuck.
First time it happened and they didn't have any idea what was going on or how to stop it, like, it probably would have gone on for a while.
Yeah, but Logan can fight through the pain to move himself through this. He's been through this before. There was a seizure at the beginning of the film. It was much briefer, much more brief. But he gets into the hotel room by using his claws to pull himself down the wall to awaiting mercenaries who see him coming, and then he slices them up, something fierce.
It kind of reads like the building has turned on its side with gravity the way he's pulling himself. But I think he's just kind of like, I need to stab into the wall here so I can, like, catch my breath and not immediately fall over and then continue forward before I stab everyone in the face.
Perhaps.
It's a bit silly still.
It's weird. 'Cause it's a little forced. Like, it's like, are they stuck in time? Like, what's happening? Like, it would have been more interesting, I think, if you would have seen, like, some people fall over or something. The fact that everyone freezes perfectly still, like they're stuck in time, is a little strange. Especially when they're injured by Logan, they stay where they are. But if it's like a nervous system thing, like, wouldn't they just, like, fall over when their brain is destroyed? Like, I don't know.
It kind of feels like a muscle thing. Like, everyone is having, like, all of their muscles stimulated by something all at once, and they all just immediately contract and tighten up where they are. But yeah, they basically just freeze.
Yeah. So he administers the medication to Charles. They get out of there. And Charles is like, oh no, I'm so sorry. I did this. Like, this was me. And then when he's
said earlier, the liquid stops the seizures, the pills keep them from happening, but presumably it's also stress induced because, Pierce's boys had tracked them and they were in the room pointing guns right at him. And he was just scared and freaked out and had a seizure.
Yeah. Which is what Logan says when Charles is like, you know, what was it? He says something like, I saved, you know, this, or I had to act or whatever. And he's like, you didn't act or you didn't do anything. You just freaked out. That's not helping. And so they are driving around. You almost get run off the road by auto trucks, which are automated trucks. And this is where they meet.
I like the BB noise they make. Burr, burr,
burr. Yeah. I love the little flashing lights too. This is where they meet, I know that they didn't want to put the cab on the front of it because then it would look like a normal truck and it wouldn't seem like it was an automated truck. So they just made them boxes that were on wheels. But aerodynamically, you wouldn't want to do that. Save on fuel.
You're saving on weight by not having a cab.
Well, but you could just put a cone thingy there, some sort of thing for the wind.
Mm.
A giant 90-degree angle box flying through the air does not, it's not good for aerodynamics. But
maybe they figured out a way to make it aerodynamic and still be a box because it's the future.
Yes, you. Well, touche. You got me.
11 years in the future. That aerodynamic technology is coming soon.
Well, they have those automated thrashers and everything, so the miracles of science, mm-hmm. perhaps. But they more importantly, they meet the family who has horses that they transport to and from whatever it was that they were doing. Question mark.
Family. The one of the few remaining old fashioned farmer types.
Yeah. But this is where we meet ER Doctor and
Eric LaSalle.
His family. Yeah, Eric LaSalle. He's got a teenage kid and the wife, and they're like, oh, no. You were so kind to help us with the horses, you know, which Charles was able to, like, control. And he's like, you should, you know, definitely come have dinner with us. And Charles is like, totally. And Logan's like, no dinner. Charles talks him into it, and they go, yeah. And Laura's not
talking
to anybody.
Logan's trying to keep him off the map at all costs, so nobody sees them at all, and Charles is trying to, you know, have some attempts or some semblance of, like, a reasonable existence, because his whole life, he just, you know, day and night, he lives in a fallen water tower, and that's, what kind of life is that to live? So he's just like, let's be normal people for one night and just see what that's like, and let's just let our guard down for a little bit and pretend, and it's nice for a little bit until, inevitably, the yeah. letting the guard down thing has the ramification that letting your guard down has, in which case you get attacked.
Well, not just that, but this isn't something where he has just put himself in jeopardy. poor Eric LaSalle's family, the horse family.
It's one of those things where it's just like you feel for them too, because not only is their existence kind of horrifying, but like they're not allowed to have friends or family or anything, because the second they do, they all die horrible deaths.
Yeah. Which is something that Logan says later, like, everybody I care about dies, so, you know, that's bad.
Literally, like, we shared dinner, and then a clone of me is coming through with knife hands and killing you.
Like, if Eric LaSalle hadn't died, like, how would you explain that? Just be like, I'm really sorry my clone slaughtered your whole family.
My clone that I've never seen before just happened to show up. But like, you know, what is he going to say to that? Like, I didn't know this clone exists. Yeah, I got knife hands that I've never explained. It's shown to you before. And my clone has knife hands too. And he kills your family with those. But I kind of defended myself with my knife hands a little bit, even though I didn't tell you I had knife hands. Sorry.
Yeah. Whoopsie daisy.
Whoops. Did I forget to mention the knife hands? I forgot to mention the knife hands at dinner, didn't I? I'm sorry.
Did I forget to mention that we are being hunted and that we would be putting you in jeopardy by being here? Oopsie.
Well, I mean, they didn't know that Caliban was still around, did they?
No, they didn't know that Caliban was still around because Pierce had said that he had left him in the ditch, as Caliban was intending to do, which was a lie. You know, Logan doesn't know any different.
But because of that, he's not expecting them to track him quite so quickly.
Right. And, of course, that also would have happened had, Xander Rice not showed up. And, you know, basically, talked Caliban into, the benefits of getting this one girl, and then everything would be fine. And of course that was not true, but that's what happens when you believe Richard E. Grant, who was Roland in LA Story. But it's neither here nor there. I saw him in the film and I was just like, where do I know you from? And it was like, oh yeah, LA Story. It's like, well,
I recognize him from Hudson Hawk.
I never saw Hudson Hawk.
Oh, you should see it. It's very dumb.
I think Dan Morin says it's one of his favorite films.
I mean, it's intentionally dumb, like on purpose. And Bruce Willis is very not Bruce Willis, but Bruce Willis. It's Richard E. Grant and Sandra Bernhardt are brother, sister, married. I forget. Anyway, they're the bad guys.
Oh,
it's fascinating.
That's a pairing. But anyway. They show up and they deploy the tool that Richard E. Grant had talked about. But we don't really see any of that. What we see is the vantage point, of an over the shoulder of someone that seems to be Wolverine-esque, by Charles' bedside with Laura at the foot of the bed. And, Charles is talking to him as talking to this shadowy figure we don't see, as if it was Logan, that, you know, don't wake Laura. And it's like, oh, I remembered, you know, what happened in Westchester, and it was me, it was my fault, and, you know, I feel terrible about this, and blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then there's the reveal that it wasn't Logan at all that he was having this confession with, and his whole thing about how nice it was to just live like normal people was to a clone, which kind of the opposite of living like a normal person. The clone of Logan proceeds to impale Charles and fight Laura. And the teenage son comes into the room and then he dies. And then the wife gets her shotgun and threatens the situation, blah, 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 blah. And now Logan and Eric LaSalle come back from the water pump, and they have their conversation about hearing the noise thing. They go in, and unfortunately, they're all dispatched by the clone of Logan, and Logan's freaking out about Charles, who's dead, but then he goes after clone, who's very slowly walking Laura across this lawn, the world's longest driveway, over to the truck. And one of the soldier guys is like, you know, we could just move the truck closer. to which Rice is like, yeah, no, we need to teach him rage. He must learn rage. And it's like the rage of walking to a car. Like, no,
I think that he was pontificating a little bit after that. He was mostly just saying like, no, he needs to be subservient to us. And we don't want to meet him halfway. We want him to do what we say. But
yeah. Well, this really is one of the film's major themes of not meeting somebody halfway and what that does.
Mm. The clone is great, not just because you've got the young Logan versus the old Logan, but it's terrifying because it's like, not only did they clone Logan, they sort of like bred him to be like extra vicious and I presume like unable to speak or whatever. But this is like big, super buff Wolverine in his prime, and like you've got withered old Logan here, like, what? Yeah, he's your clone, but like he's like you in your prime. Like, you can't, what are you gonna do? How are you gonna beat that? You kind of can't. And it's terrifying, the proposition that this thing like follows commands of the bad guys, because like, how are you gonna stop this? You're not, except for you know, Chekhov's adamantium bullet.
Yeah, and he's obviously not suffering as Logan is, so.
No, he's like a week old. They just, yeah. they built him in place, kind of like Ripley last week.
so fun how both of these had clones, but.
Clones who were suddenly 30 years old.
Yeah. The super duper backup movies. But.
The super duper cinematic universe.
The super duper cinematic universe would just be the same movie over and over and over again.
But it would be an exact copy. It would be perfect.
Yes.
You wouldn't lose any important files.
No, not a pixel would be lost.
Mm.
But yeah, so there's a big fight. And then Eric LaSalle is not quite dead yet, and he rams the clone with the truck onto farm equipment, and the clone is impaled and grievously wounded.
There's a couple of saved at the last minute moments in this movie where it's helpful in the sense that you see that these people are not infallible. Like, Logan is capable of being defeated, 24 is capable of being defeated. All of them are, but they're just like, you know, saved at the last second from being viciously killed by someone flying in, whether it's Laura or Mr. Munson with the truck or whatever, just to sort of like knock them out right before they put in the kill shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they get him for a second, and then Eric LaSalle gets out and he's got a shotgun and he shoots up X-24. He turns the gun on Logan, and Logan's ready to take the bullets and stuff, but then the gun is empty, and Eric LaSalle falls over dead. And this is where Logan's like, ah, crap, now I'm still alive and things. So he goes and he gathers up Laura. And
oh, yeah, don't forget, meanwhile, Caliban, who is very sad that all of these people are being killed, including his pals, because he's watching on the closed-circuit video camera of X-24 that he killed Charles, and he's killing everybody else. He gets very upset, and he sneaks a couple grenades out from underneath the cage and drops them and blows up the van, including himself and a couple of the, whatever the bad guys call themselves, I forget. But he doesn't quite kill... Yeah, it doesn't quite kill Pierce, the Reaver. Isn't that a thing? Isn't that a Firefly thing, too?
Yeah, yeah. Reaver is one of those things that you use when you're doing your first pass on your script and you want to sound cool in the 90s.
What else has Reavers?
I don't know. Just stuff. It feels like the kind of thing that you just like put in there, like, or Wraiths or something. You're just like, oh, yeah, there's a thing, and it's like, oh, but that doesn't mean anything. Mm. Like, you're just using something you think sounds cool.
Apparently, Border Reavers is a reference to raiders along the Anglo-Scottish border between the 12th and 16th century.
Yes. That's exactly what this film was going for.
Second result is cyborg villains in Marvel Comics, 1988.
Mm. Oh, maybe it was a bad thing from the comics that they just felt obligated to carry forward.
So maybe the Firefly boys stole it from Marvel. Mm. Is what I'm saying.
Well, Joss Whedon read and wrote some of the X properties, but that was later. I think in the early 2000s or something.
Mm. It was certainly after 1988.
Yes. Anywho, they get out of there barely, and. Yeah, the bad guys are licking their wounds and getting X-24 off of the farm equipment. And this is where they are in whatever that temporary staging thing is. And U.S. vague government military guy is like, you know, you got civilians killed and we need results or whatever and stuff. And it's like, okay, it's weird. And Bryce is like, oh, keep Stephen Merchant. You know, he was a good tracker and he had a high IQ. Like, take a sample. But he's dead. And, you know, Pierce gets a new hand that he's fixing up, Luke Skywalker style, flexing the fingers back and forth. And then he has a photo that he obtained from the action, which has all the kids in it. Presumably, I think it was the birthday celebration photo or something similar. Which they weren't supposed to be celebrating. They're things. They don't have birthdays. But they, there's this photo, and he flips over to the back, and there's the names of all the people, and there's also the coordinates for Eden that were written down. And he recognizes that as latitude and longitude and stuff, and he's gonna go get them.
Mm-hmm. And now it's a race. An amazing race where you got Logan and Laura driving. Mm-hmm. Well, they bury Charles by a lake, and there's a sad little scene where he tries to give a speech, but he can't because he's too sad. And then they try to drive away, but their truck won't start, and Logan has a little hissy fit and smacks it with a shovel and then basically passes out in the middle of the road because he's got a bunch of wounds from fighting his younger, stronger clone. Mm-hmm. And Laura steals some poor hunter guy's old Bronco or whatever and throws Logan in the back and keeps on driving and drops him off at a veterinarian's office to help fix him up a little bit.
Yeah, and the veterinarian's like, oh, you know, I like you people. I so few of you left. You should, like, stay here with me.
We have a lot of action around these parts, and you're very interesting and fascinating. Can I prod and poke you a little bit more.
Can I study you? Do you mind? I know you've had a lifetime of being an experiment, but you should probably just stick around here.
He's like, dude, I'm literally dying right now. You can't. I just need to go away.
Yeah. But they hop on into the car, and this is where it's revealed that Laura can talk.
Yeah.
What's funny is the way they reveal it, because at first she just says Donata. And then he's like, wait, you could talk this whole entire time. And then she starts going into a bit of a spiel about things. She uncorks all of the talking that she could have done through the previous part of this film. And Logan's like, no, shut up. Immediately, he's regretting it.
She hits him in the face a bunch of times when he says he's not going to drive her to North Dakota.
Yeah. But, and he's trying to explain that it's all baloney, but she's like, just do it. And so he's like, all right, fine, you won me over with your powers of persuasion. and so he drives her up in that direction and falls asleep at the wheel a couple times before she takes over the driving duties and gets them to the location, leaves him at the car and goes up and scopes out the situation, I assume, and then he wakes up and goes out after her and then passes out again, and then they haul him up and then they like medicate him, and he's going in and out of consciousness for a few days, and they give him the sweet old-fashioned Wolverine button chop weird cut thing.
It was kind of funny too, because it's like, you know, they want to like throw in some more of those old school references, but you can't be too heavy-handed about how you're bringing that stuff back in. But it's all these kids who grew up reading the comic books and have his dolls and think it's funny, and like he's passed out sleeping and they all have these little like child safety scissors and they're all snipping away at his beard and giggling while he's passed out.
Yeah. What was weird though is that these kids were all theoretically born and raised in a facility in Mexico. And that is why Laura speaks Spanish fluently, but has very heavily accented English, even though she's a pretty good mastery of English. But these kids all basically speak English without any accent or difficulty with that, and don't seem to speak or understand Spanish. But that just was a little weird to me. I was just like, so in the world of this movie, they somehow have a facility in Mexico where one child has had this education where she speaks Spanish and heavily accented English, and that the rest of the children in the same facility don't.
Maybe the others were raised and harvested somewhere else, and they all came together afterwards.
I thought they were all supposed to be from the same facility, because she kept saying their names and she had a photo of them.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe they became friends later. Maybe they weren't.
I mean, who knows what their education process is like, but
maybe they were restored in place with accents that they had already had with their clone self, because they're clones, remember?
No, but they're not really clones.
She's a clone of Wolverine, who historically has a heavy Mexican accent.
No, but she's not a clone though. She's the nurse so delicately puts it, seed. It's stuff. I don't know how they harvested that one. Presumably not with mechanical threshing machines in a field, but they somehow have
from a mutant bank.
Yeah. Oh, maybe when he was in the facility at Alkali Lake or whatever. Like Xavier says, like they have your blood or whatever at one point, but I don't know how you turn that into quote seed. Unquote.
I mean, but, if you were going to experimentally inject some dude with a whole bunch of adamantium to see if you can make him into a metal skeleton, or maybe kill him accidentally, you'd probably want some backups. You'd probably pull some bone marrow, some blood, some tissue, just to have it on file.
Some other stuff. But So anyway.
Remember in did you see Origins movie?
I did not see Origins. I saw the reviews and I was just like, pass, hard pass.
I was gonna say, do you remember the woman in that movie who had Wolverine claws?
No.
Yeah, there was a woman in that movie who had Wolverine claws. trying to remember what they called her in that movie. Oh, wait, is this... Because
in X2, they had Lady Deathstrike, who had adamantium fingernails.
Is that who you're thinking of? That's what I'm thinking of. Yeah, maybe that's who I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
But that wasn't Origins?
No, that was X2. She worked for Stryker, and...
Yeah.
Yeah, she was a
Deathstrike.
Former relation of Wolverine in the comic, and I don't remember if they established that in the film, but she has adamantium fingernails.
I thought they came out of, like, her fingertips. I didn't think they were actually fingernails.
They're fingernails. And they rendezvous up at the Alkali, like, the abandoned facility, and stuff happens up there.
Hmm. They fight. I thought she had more metal in her, too, like, you know, bones and stuff.
No, she does.
She just has fingernails.
Well, she has fingernails instead of claws.
It's basically the same thing.
Yeah. Identical.
Pointy adamantium bits that come out of her fingers.
Yeah, but nothing out of her toes.
Right.
Which is the revolution that we got here. But
didn't she have like a red leather outfit in that movie? To contrast their like dark blue/black leather outfits.
I don't remember, to be perfectly honest. All I know is I think it was Kelly Hu that played Lady Deathstrike, but I don't remember specifically what she was wearing. As hard as that might be to believe.
That was back when all of the X-Men had very silly outfits.
Yeah, very...
Oh, here's a photo of her. She has like white-out contact lenses.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and
she had the... There was a serum that was being harvested from one mutant that allowed Stryker to basically give him the power of suggestion and control over other mutants. So he would, you know, do that. So they would get like a little milky substance in their eyes, basically, and be mentally controlled.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And this photo definitely makes it look more like more than just fingernails. They're big blades.
Okay.
They're like bird claws.
Yeah, but I think you're misunderstanding what I'm saying. They came from the nails on her fingertips, and they extended.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they are the nails. They're just really long.
You say so.
I mean, I think that's right. Anyway, it doesn't matter, because we're in Dakota, and there's the world's quietest drone documenting where these kids are camping, and this is where they mobilize their stuff to come get them, but they're going across the border, but they're not going to make the pass before the thing. And I just, it's weird, because it's like, is the Canadian border patrol like right on the border right then? Like, if they cross the line, it's not like this horrible, super military, evil government that has operated across borders before is going to like be like, oh no, invisible Canadian border, we can't do anything. But they play it like that.
Yeah, the Mounties are going to be just on the other side. They're going to say, hold up now, boys, you can't come over here.
Yeah, no, there's no enforcement on the other side waiting for them. But they have confirmed that the satellites won't be watching when they make the crossing, and that they will have asylum once they get over on the other side.
If nothing else, they're looking for they're looking to disappear into the woods where nobody's looking, and then just kind of be untrackable for a while.
Well, I don't think that's how asylum works, but
yeah. Well, they use the word asylum. I'm not sure that they're super familiar with what that actually means.
But they have they're found out, and Wolverine wakes up with the vial of go get him juice next to him, and so he's like, oh no, I shouldn't take this whole thing because it'll kill me. And
he seems very familiar with it too, and it's good that they don't bother to get into where that came from, why he knows what it is, what it was used for, like all that stuff, because then it would just begin to unravel. But he knows what it is, he knows what it does. And he knows how it should or shouldn't be taken, and he uses it as momentarily restorative juice so he can go kill a bunch of bad guys.
And he does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he dispatches
a lot
of them. Although I was never entirely clear. There's like basically a road that's traveling along in parallel to where everybody's going, that the tractor thing and the other jeeps are going along in. And they seem to be as close to or as far away from the kids and Logan as possible in any of these particular moments. Like, somehow they're all the way up at the front so that they can get the lead kid, but then they also were, you know, following from the rear to try and catch them. It's a little weird. I don't appreciate the geography of that scene as described.
Look, there's a lot of chaos, a lot of confusion.
Yeah.
The bad guys are everywhere, capturing all the kids.
Yeah. We see Cold Breath Girl use her cold breath to free somebody's arm off Terminator 2 style and then crack it open.
Except that guy is going to be in much worse off shape when his arm thaws out than the T-1000.
Well, it's a good thing he works for a company that gives people metal hands for free. But
if I was him, I'd be like, oh my god, somebody do something about it before it thaws and start gushing everywhere.
Ugh. But then you have the girl who trips and falls over and uses pine needles to explode bodies, which is...
she's like throwing bark and pine needles and grass and stuff at everyone, and it's very...
But then
I guess
exploded.
With enough velocity. Yeah, I mean, with enough velocity, like, don't they say, like, what is it that they say, like, stuff will, like wooden stakes will stick all the way through a palm tree or something in a windstorm?
Yeah, but...
I don't know if she's controlling the wind or the foliage or what.
It seems to be the foliage, because when they knock over Pierce on the ground, the grass grows around him and holds him in place. As grass is capable of doing.
Yeah.
Especially when grass is also being frozen at the same time.
Mm-hmm. There's nothing stronger than frozen grass. Have you ever tried to get out of frozen grass? It's worse than quicksand.
No. It's nature's quicksand is what it is. But don't think about that one. But so they they have their big fight, and Logan's all like, I'm out of my Super Mario star is out. I'm totally out of juice. And he's like, you know, Laura, go towards your friends, and then you'll know when to do your thing. And so he goes and causes a bit of a distraction where he gets them monologuing. And they don't notice that he has a gun. And he shoots Rice through his throat and then shoots Pierce in his hand. And then all chaos breaks loose and stuff. So that's good. But unfortunately...
It's pretty great, too, that the face-off against the bad guys where they're talking face-to-face. And he's like, yes, you know, you knew my father. And he's like, uh-huh. Pretty sure I killed him, too. And he's like, whatever. And he's like, well, he hear what we're doing, and it's just like, blam, right in the neck, dead.
Yeah. Well, not before he gives a satisfying conclusion to Eric LaSalle's weird high fructose corn syrup rant that was in the middle of the film. Because it was one of those things where I was when we were watching them go to the pumping station, and he starts talking about how the machines are harvesting the corn and how it's genetically modified and tastes terrible and blah 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 blah. And he's like, "Well, if it's so bad, why do people eat it?" He's like, "Well, they don't eat it. It just gets turned into corn syrup and gets put in all the drinks and all their food and everything." And I was like, "This is a really strange place to put your message in here about." Eating locally sourced non-GMO foods.
He's one of the real farmers, so that's what he's going to talk about is farming, because that's what he knows. Like that's his party chatter.
Yeah, but that apparently wasn't just like a throwaway rant, because that is what ties into Rice at the end here, having his villain monologue of how he has controlled basically the mutant population by prohibiting natural birth of mutants by putting stuff inside of the genetically modified foods that people are eating. And that's why it's more that he has control over all of the mutants that can be grown basically for laboratory and soldier purposes, which is why they're a valuable commodity. And then he's shot in the neck and dies. But who knows what happens to the vital corn syrup industry after this? And their I don't know, chemical castration of mutant development. But that was an interesting twist. And there is, of course, X-24, who's released from his little cage thing and freaking out.
And they probably should have released him a little sooner.
Yeah, a little bit.
It's cool.
Yeah, but they release him, and it's all like, oh, you should be mad. He killed, you know, Rice, and he's like, arr, arr, Frankenstein mad.
Yeah, he does look down and see his dead papa on the ground and gets angry.
Yeah, and there's the back and forth with him and Logan, and he obviously has the upper hand, so to speak, with Logan, because Logan is off of the super medical juice and has one heck of a hangover from that, but is also very, very bad off from their previous encounter still, in many ways, as well as being ill with whatever that internal poison or cancer seems to be with the adamantium. So he's not capable, really. But Laura interprets this as her time to shine, and beats the crap out of X-24. And then Logan, you know, intervenes again, and this is where, oh, wait, no. What's-his-face, the lead kid, flips the truck on X-24, and then they're all like, go to the border. And as they're tearfully going away, the truck starts moving, and it's like, oh, he's not dead. And it's like, well, no shit. Because, like, Logan wouldn't have been killed by that, so this
yeah,
thing
would
be.
He's metal, too. It's like putting a rock on top of a rock. It's not going to destroy it.
That is definitely not how rock, paper, scissors works.
No, it's not how truck, Logan, scissors works either.
Yeah. Oh, man. Could you imagine how dangerous it would be to play rock, paper, scissors,
rock, paper,
with Logan?
Scissors with Logan?
Man, just be like, you know, rock beats scissors, and he's, you know, schnicked, does it, and then it's like, oh,
I mean, it's
oh,
pretty
sorry.
Predictable what Logan's going to throw at any given time.
Yeah, that's true. It's everything scissors with him. But anyway, the thing flips off, the kids are running, and Laura's like, what do? I go with the kids to safety, or do I try to save my horrible, no-good dad who would leave me by the side of the road, and who almost did at the beginning of the film. Like, what do I do about the situation? And she decides to save him. Basically, she has the adamantium bullet that she had confronted him about in an earlier scene. She puts it into a revolver that she finds lying around, which is very helpful that one happened to be there.
Well, that's the one Logan dropped that he shot the other guys with.
Whoa, it was. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, saved.
I thought that was one of the mercenary revolvers, and I was like, when did they start carrying revolvers? But you were correct.
Well, Logan stole it off of one of the mercenaries earlier too.
Oh,
so that's
well,
also,
see, that doesn't. It's just like, why do you happen to have a revolver that takes exactly the kind of ammunition you needed to kill yourself with?
I mean, it looked like a 357 Magnum cartridge. It was a very large cartridge, so I could see some sort of like, look how cool my gun is, dumb mercenary guy carrying one of those around.
I guess also. Is it just me, or did the adamantium bullet not have, like, gunpowder, like a cap thing?
Oh, it did kind of look like a blank where the end was just crimped instead of actually having a bullet in it?
Yeah, it looked like it was just a piece of metal, like a metal slug that had no powder casing that would explode and propel the bullet. But I'm not, you know, of course, an adamantium bullet expert, so I... will not testify to that effect.
Picture of it here, because you know what I know. He actually, the bullet comes from the Origins movie.
Oh,
technically, okay. I just googled it. It just reminded me, like, oh, look at this plot hole. We found it because it's this thing. Although even the bullet looks different from one movie to the other one. But
I mean, it's not really a plot hole because. I believe that he has a bullet, and he says he found it a long time ago, so...
Yeah.
I believe it.
It's, It's what young Stryker shot him in the head with to give him the amnesia.
Oh. Well.
Spoiler, sorry.
Great. There is this bullet that he's been carrying around to theoretically kill himself with. And so Laura has it and decides to load up the revolver and shoot X-24 in the head with it. Instead, this takes care of that problem. His head explodes on one side and makes quite a mess. And Logan is totally fine and they live happily ever after. he's not. He dies on the branch thingy. He just can't heal and stuff and things, and so he's not great. And they bury him. And presumably he doesn't come back to life underground and like is trapped down
terrifying.
There.
Terrifying. Just being through a pile of dirt and river rocks.
Yeah, I think this is kind of one of the situations where for safety purposes, you should be like cremated or decapitated or something. Like you don't want to just like leave him like underground, like as is.
Well, he was feeling bad, and he said, oh, this is what this feels like, because he's never experienced dying.
Yeah, but what if all of a sudden he just wakes back up again, and he's like, oh, nope, just needed a nap.
he'll probably be like, wow, I feel like $1 million after having a six-month nap under this pile of rocks.
I was just hibernating, like Wolverines do. But that's the end. They presumably make their way to safety. And then Johnny Cash...
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
When the man comes around.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good song to use.
Yeah. So, I like this. And of the X-Men movies that I've seen, I think this is probably the most sophisticated, even if it is the most violent and gory.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I guess it wins in that category. But that's a low bar? I guess.
Very low bar, but I think this clears the bar very easily.
Yes.
Because it's a good movie.
Yeah. And of course, I qualify that as not having seen Days of Future Past, Origins, The Wolverine, or either of the Deadpool movies, or Apocalypse.
You know, there are some very fascinating plot mechanics in Days of Future Past that you would just adore.
Probably not. But yeah.
Oh man. But you got those big metal flying robot guys or whatever.
Sentinels.
That they're fighting. Sentinels. You got the future Sentinels. You got the past Sentinels. You got fighting off the Sentinels while what's her name uses her powers to send Logan's mind back in time.
Kitty Pryde.
His body.
Kitty Pryde?
Trying to remember who's the one sending his mind back in time.
I think it's Kitty Pryde.
Who's Kitty Pryde?
Well, it's a mutant.
Who plays her?
Juno in
X-3. Yeah, there you go. Okay. Yeah, that's her. Okay.
Yeah.
So she sends his mind back in time, and then there's him in the old Wolverine body, and he's got to convince young Charles that he really knows him and in the future. There's all kinds of fun stuff.
Yeah. Well, what's weird about that is that's an alternate future that they come from to go do that stuff. And mm-hmm. in that alternate future, it's after this stuff, isn't it? And they're alive in that alternate one.
They made
themselves a future where they die sooner, maybe.
Mm. Oh, I see what you're saying. Well, the other thing is their goal is to like prevent the extinction of mutant kind.
Oh,
which, you know,
they did that so well.
Yeah, this is 2014, so this wasn't even that long ago.
No,
you got Jennifer Lawrence there.
Mm-hmm. She was Mystique.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Days of Future, what was the Matthew Vaughn one?
The who?
The one directed by Matthew Vaughn.
Oh, I don't know. I couldn't tell you. First Class?
Okay. Yes, First Class.
First Class.
I saw that one. That is the only other X movie besides this one I've seen since X-Men 3.
Well, Days of Future Past kind of mixes that, obviously, with the younger crew with mm-hmm. the older crew together.
Two great tastes.
To travel through time together.
I don't know. I like that this one is sort of grounded. I mean, there's clones and stuff running around. And there's a nurse documentarian, which is probably the most outlandish thing. But
it's as grounded as a movie could be, really.
Yeah,
in
this sort of comic universe, there's no time travel. There's no giant robots or outer space threats. There's none of that stuff. The stakes are very personal. Very, very personal on many levels. So it really, I think... works in its favor.
Yeah, it's an enjoyable movie to watch. I have seen it several times now, and I still enjoyed watching it again for this show here.
Yeah, I don't regret having watched it. It was you picked a good one, and we checked the box for our X-Men franchise fulfillment for Foxtober,
for Clone Timber or whatever. Yep.
Huge jack-o'-lantern. But anyway, that's the end.
It's also funny. I'm sure you've seen the photo series over the years from when he was originally Wolverine to what he looks like now and how he is just like 80 pounds of muscle larger than he was the first time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. That's for sure.
It's kind of funny to see some of these older photos of him.
I mean... Yeah, for some reason, he's one of those people that you see his face, and it's like, what are you using, like, on your face?
Well, in this movie, too, they do a really good job of making his face look extra, like, withered and old and terrible.
Yeah, but it's mainly to contrast when you see the younger clone.
Sure, but he's also supposed to look old and shitty.
Yeah, because he's not healing as well, yeah. So he's decaying.
And presumably Wolverine is, like, 100 years old or something.
I think it's more than that, maybe.
Yeah, probably a lot. If he was in feudal Japan or whatever the hell was going on.
That wasn't that long ago, but yeah. All right, so let's say that this one is over and X marks the Logan. We're done.
You really wanna end on that?
Nope, but you think of something better or it's that.
Yeah, I got nothing.
How was that for motivation?
I was going to say the Aristocrats, but it seemed unwarranted.
Oh, well, when is the Aristocrats? I mean, even in the joke of the Aristocrats, it's unwarranted.